It's time for Twig. This week in Google, Kevin Marks and Matthew Ingram are here along with Jeff Jarvis. Gina has the week off. We'll talk about YouTube's plan to acquire Twitch and why it makes so much sense. German publishers have decided they hate Google. They want to break it up. And the new head of Google Glass. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 250, recorded May 21st, 2014. I like the fiddly bits. This Week in Google is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/twig. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twig. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 35 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIG514. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of Legal Plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG to get $10 off at checkout. It's time for This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the Googleplex, the Googleverse, the Facebookverse, the Twitterverse, and all that stuff, the cloud. To Jeff Jarvis is here. He just flew in from San Francisco. Poor guy. You were in San Francisco for a day, less than a day, to talk less to than a talk day, Google.
18 hours, I calculated, yeah. Plus wow. About 20 minutes for a plane problem. But yeah, that's
you fly
it.
A lot.
I do. I am Global Services, I'll have you know, in
wow.
United.
That's the
so when they
level.
Start boarding, I'm that obnoxious prick who
jumps
goes
ahead.
On first.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost want to say, hey, where's your wheelchair, Jarvis? Where's your crutches?
Soon enough.
Yeah. Gina's out because her lovely little daughter, Edda, not feeling too well, and she wanted to spend some time with the baby while she's under the weather.
Oh.
She'll get over that quick enough. But meanwhile, Kevin Marks has joined us. Always great to have Kevin in his garden.
Nice to see you again.
Bird warning. There will be birds.
There are indeed birds. Yes. I'm actually sitting in a slightly different place than usual because we've got some new garden furniture.
It's actually gorgeous. I love this.
I wouldn't show you around the garden furniture. We've got got some really comfy garden armchairs.
Always nice to have excellent armchairs in the garden. And from all the way from Canada, Matthew Ingram of GigaOhm fame is here as well. Nice to have you, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
Boy, we got a great crew for this show today. A lot of fun. Our top story, the Nest smoke alarm has finally been recalled in its entirety. 440,000 smoke alarms for a safety risk.
Oh boy.
Yeah. This is the company Google bought for $3.2 billion. They had two products. One was, of course, the famous Nest thermostat. The other was a smoke alarm that talked to you and let you wave your arms to disable it. And apparently that caused a little bit of a problem. They halted sales of the alarms last month after recognizing that the temporary silencing feature wasn't so temporary. The Nest has to be connected to the internet and linked to an account for an automatic update. So if you have one, make sure that you get the update. You go to Nest Sense. This is why, by the way, internet-connected devices are a pain in the keister. You have to go to Nest Sense on your account and ensure that the button for Nest Wave is set to off and grayed out. Those who have not connected their devices to a wireless network and a Nest account should do so. The devices will then be automatically updated, and consumers should take the aforementioned steps to ensure the update is complete. Meanwhile, I guess they're recalling them unless you say, well, I downloaded the update. I guess they just can't assume that everybody will have the internet access and so forth. Customers can contact Nest Labs for more information, 800-249-4280, or visit nest.com. Click on the Nest Protect Safety Notice link. Wait a minute. Why am I getting... Oh, that's really obnoxious. ABC.com just redirected me as I went to nest.com to go to somewhere else. Some crap ad. All right, where is it? I'm looking. Nest smoke alarm. Life with Nest Protect. Watch the video. I don't see anything about a... Oh, here it is. Safety letter from the CEO. So it says, so at Nest, we conduct regular rigorous tests. During recent lab testing of the Nest Protect smoke alarm, we observed a unique combination of circumstances that caused us to question whether Nest Wave, a feature that lets you turn off your alarm with a wave of a hand, could be unintentionally activated. If you went like this. Hey, Chad! Hey!
Hey, kids!
Hey!
Get out! Get out! Don't go in there!
This could delay an alarm going off if there were a real fire. We don't know of any customers who have experienced this, but the fact that it could even potentially happen is important. I think this is good. They're telling you what to do. You know, you can get it fixed. Now, here's the question. Can you buy a Nest Protect anymore? They stopped all sales.
Oh.
Hmm. Because it was the Consumer Product Association or whatever that recalled it, right?
Oh, it's a CPC recall, not...
Yeah.
Oh. So, yeah, Nest Protect is off the market until they figure this thing out.
I got to say, the whole waving thing, when I heard about it, I thought, well, what if... How does it know that you're waving at it?
Maybe you're just running around because the house is on fire.
Yeah. What if you're just waving or there's a fly or something?
And not like, waving, but drowning.
Well, so you'd wave and the alarm would say, oh, he doesn't want me to go off. But how long does that last? An hour? An hour would be bad. A minute question. Wouldn't be. So,
I guess forever is what it sounds like.
You didn't really want me to go off anymore, did you?
Wave to disable.
That's not a good feature.
It reminds me of the, maybe we're going to talk about this, but the Google Glass nod to pay with Bitcoin. Seems to me that could really backfire.
Do you have that, Jeff, on yours? Nod to pay?
No, I haven't done that.
You accidentally sneeze and suddenly find you bought something.
Right. Do you want to pay?
Yeah.
That seems a little too easy. Google Glass had nod to, but you have to, no, this is a feature that that Google themselves is offering. No, it's a new app that takes mobile payment to a whole new level. It's called Eaze, maybe a little too easy, E-A-Z-E. It allows Google users to link to a virtual Bitcoin wallet. Oh, Eaze is a wallet. You activate the Eaze app with a voice command. Use Google Glass to scan the QR code provided by the store associated with the product. Once it is scanned, a head nod completes the mobile payment transaction. Well, there's a few steps before you have to.
That's true.
Yeah. But is it really that hard to pay?
I need it to be harder.
Yeah, not easier.
I don't need Amazon and Google to make it easier.
Yeah, no, harder, not easier.
Yeah. Or glass.
So he's looking at the QR code.
He's going to scan a QR code with his eyes.
can't you do that?
Those special purchases. And Eaze makes accepting payments just as easy.
Enjoy you don't look dorky enough with your glass on, so we're going to make you look sillier.
But he still has a girlfriend.
Using cutting-edge technologies that are available to
Scarf
us now.
Helps.
Oh, no, I'll know it. Don't worry.
Using bitcoins and glass to enable
payments. This is a joke, isn't it?
It has to be. It's like, here's a QR code as big as your plate.
We live in a world that is indistinguishable from The Onion.
Well, there is a parody. There's a Nest parody. If you look at the bottom of the Google section of the rundown.
Uh-huh.
And Google had it taken down because they didn't have a sense of humor about it.
What?
Come on.
Yeah, I read it. So the third from the bottom.
Yeah, I see it. I got it here. Let me just play the... This is a parody of The Nest. Oh, but it was, is it gone? So I can't play it.
It's watered down, evidently. It was at Republica.
It was a German political activist group. Oh, it was a parody website posting...
Yeah.
Poking fun at Google's products. So did they have the right to be forgotten?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently Google has that right. Wow. See, I would think Google would bend over backwards at this point to make sure no sites get taken down.
Yeah.
Did it violate trademarks or... But no, it's parody. Yeah, you can do anything you want. You can do anything you want. Parody. Didn't people in New York a few years ago distribute a fake New York Times as an April Fool's joke?
Yes.
What did the Times do?
Times was okay in that case. I think they made it clear enough. But there was a well-known blogger, did a New York Times kind of correction site, and the New York Times went after him. And you know, it's just the reflex of lawyers.
Well, so here's what happens. So if you go to google-nest.org now, you get a single candle saying, "Dear Internet, this beautiful website has been taken down because Google is worried about their brand and the future of Nest Labs, which is in the business of making creepy products designed to collect even more data from you. Apparently, they just can't get enough. They must have it all."
There's a video below.
Yeah.
That's the launch.
Oh, it's Republica.
It's Republica, which unfortunately I had to cancel. I was dying to go this year.
What? Oh, you didn't cancel because of this.
No. Oh, okay. Yes, if they insult Google,
I'm not going. Republica,
I'm boycotting Germany until they get to their senses. For you.
It's called Google Nest. Right. And well, I'd like to introduce two people and show you what this is about.
It's called Google Nest.
Please welcome Dr. Gloria Spindle and Paul von Ribbeck.
Those are phony names, I presume.
Hard to tell.
They're funny in German.
I don't know. They don't know.
Wow. How nice to be here. Republica for the first time. I'm Gloria Spindle.
Not her real name.
I'm Paul von Ribbeck. Hello.
It's really amazing to be here.
So I can see Google would be upset about this because they're kind of billing themselves as from Google.
The energy and the collective brain power here. I was just saying to Paul yesterday, we should be recruiting.
Really?
So as Max kind of hinted at in the introduction, we at Google have actually been thinking...
Yeah, see, you can't say we at Google, even if it's...
We see on your program...
That's kind of impersonating.
...topics like surveillance, privacy, data, Snowden. These are issues that are close to our heart as well.
It's also not funny, which is probably the greatest sin of all. Google is doing all right. According to the yearly brand ratings, Adweek says Google is the world's most valuable brand, topping Apple for the first time. This is the BrandZ top 100 most valuable global brands. Apple now number two after Google.
These lists make no sense. But having said that, this makes sense. You know, Google's in everybody's lives more than Apple's in everybody's lives.
Yeah. I mean, they rate it on a variety of categories, right?
Yes.
I'm sure they'll explain that here.
Yeah, last year we talked about this, and I looked it up, how they do it, and I forget.
40% rise in brand value drove Google to the number one position.
40%?
Sounds so scientific.
Yeah.
The brand has appreciated
42%.
Well, it's appreciated 324% since the inception of the BrandZ Top 100 Most Valuable Global Brands list.
The only brand that really benefits from this is BrandZ because branding it.
Yeah, BrandZ, BrandZ. Amazon in the top 10 for the first time. Facebook, second fastest rising brand, increasing 68% in brand value. I'm sorry. I have to stop now. Moving on. Jeez. SEC filing. Google says they're planning international acquisitions worth up to $30 billion.
They have all this cash overseas. They can't repatriate to the U.S. or else they'll pay taxes on it. So they got to do something with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Google generated about half its revenue in non-U.S. markets in 2012. That money then can't be repatriated to Google U.S. without paying tax, U.S. tax.
I think that's about a half their cash hoard. They have, I think I saw 68 billion plus another 2 billion in long term. I think that's the number.
Waze was an Israeli company, so that was a good one.
Yep.
DeepMind, they got them. They're in London, $400 million. Spider.io, London. RangeSpan, also in the UK. Google told the SEC that it had recently pursued but discontinued a potential buyout of a foreign company with a valuation in the range of $4 to $5 billion.
Yeah, what do you think it could have been?
Spotify?
Could be.
Oh.
Who could that be? Not Beats. Who could that be? Twitch was, do we know, there's still that rumor that YouTube's going to buy Twitch, although I haven't seen any further confirmation.
That's not a $5 billion.
That's not $4
billion. Can't be $4 billion. I mean, we're talking, that's a lot of money. That's more than they paid for YouTube itself. Kevin Marks, you're international. Actually, you're both international.
Canada's not really
international. That doesn't count.
Well, but it would count in this, wouldn't it? If it were a Canadian company, it would count. Let me Google, what is Spotify worth?
We don't have anything worth $4
billion. Not RIM, for sure. Spotify's value tops $4 billion.
Good coincidence.
And, yeah, that was last year. So, there you go. That's based on investors and so forth. The most in November, Technology Crossover Ventures led a $250 million investment round into Spotify that valued them at $4 billion, up from $3 billion the year before. But would Google want Spotify?
I would think so.
Yeah, especially if it's true that Apple's buying Beats. This could be the consolidation of the streaming music business.
I said this last time. I don't understand why Apple isn't buying Spotify. I don't understand.
Much better than Beats.
Yeah. I mean, to me, as a service,
they got the cash. They have double the cash that Google has.
Well, but they don't have those income-generating headphones. Spotify's done nothing but lose money. Beats at least makes $1 billion or generates $1 billion in revenue a year. Google also in this SEC filing said that it was considering things like serving ads to your thermostat. Please,
Bad choice.
Please.
Do you like a cashmere sweater about now, or do you want to spend more money on energy?
Yeah, but then later it said it wasn't thinking about
that. Oh, it just is a letter. They wrote a letter to the SEC.
Hypothetically
saying that it could be serving ads and other content to refrigerators, car dashboards, thermostats, glasses, watches. This is why we shouldn't have to disclose revenue generated from mobile devices.
I think it was a dodge, you know, to get around having to disclose their mobile revenue.
They didn't want to break it down. They said it doesn't make sense to break out mobile revenue since the definition of mobile will continue to evolve as more smart devices roll out.
Which is true, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't mean necessarily they're planning. It's more like, hey, we don't know what mobile means or where, you know, what is mobile revenue? If we put it on a refrigerator, is that mobile? If we put it on a thermostat, is that mobile?
Pretty sure the fridge is not mobile. But
or the thermostat. I've never seen anybody carry his thermostat around.
I think a car for sure.
Yeah. Glasses. Watches.
You could see a Waze sort of heads up to traffic display on your dashboard.
And that would be super awesome.
Yeah. Ads showing up.
I would put it up with an ad in there. I don't mind. Waze is loaded with ads. Every time I stop the car, I get an ad from Waze. It's very annoying.
Yeah, I don't think that's the value of Waze. I think the value of Waze
absolutely
is
who
you are.
Yeah.
But look, praise Waze. I got out of Newark Airport. I pull over, say, Waze, how long? And email Chad, and it was right to the minute.
Yeah, that's the best thing about one of the best things about GPS is knowing kind of almost exactly when you're going to arrive. And most GPSs are good about that now. If they have traffic information.
But the problem is you get trapped by Google Maps being useless at searching for things. I had an example of that yesterday. Let me find the link. But So what happens is if you put a calendar event in and you put the name of the company before its address, Google will, instead of reading the address out of that location, will do a search for the name of the company and send you somewhere else entirely. Generally doing a bad search for the name of the company. I've got a...
Yeah, it does ridiculous things. Like, I'll be searching for something that I know is 2 miles away, and it's not smart enough to see that. It gives me the same named place in Utah.
Right.
Right. Or Italy. Yeah, I've had the same thing
happen. In Italy?
Well, or some completely different country or state. I mean, it should at least know where I am. You would
know. That's the point.
So this is... I've got
the whole point.
Get the link. This is the... what I got on my phone yesterday. I'll put it in the chat. I got a Google Now alert saying leave now because it'll take you 2 hours and 44 minutes to cycle to 41 Bryant Street.
Had you ever been there? Matter 3 Design?
And actually, if you search for 41, I just done a search for 41 Bryant Street and it said it was 17 minutes. But because Matter Ventures was there, was in the thing, it searched for some other place called Ventures that happened to be in Redwood City.
It said it was the same. Oh, that's very interesting.
This is deeply broken. Basically, the problem is that Google Maps is really, really bad at search. To the point now, I think Foursquare gave up. Foursquare used to throw across the name of the business and the address, and now it throws across a lat long point because it can't trust Google Maps to get the place right. So this is a calendar event I've got with that address in it, and Google
so this is more than just started. Getting the wrong place, because if, you know, I could see how it might get the wrong place and then give you not only wrong directions, but a wrong time estimate. But in this case, it had the actual address.
Right. It ignores the address.
It ignored me before.
I had this problem when I went to Philadelphia and I was supposed to be going to Penn. So I put the address for this place in Penn and it sent me to... another place with a similar name in another college on the other side of town, and not knowing Philadelphia, we you know went over there and it took it an hour to get back. So it's weird.
In fact, in another card, it says it's only 17 minutes.
Yeah, no, that was it. So I literally searched for the address earlier, but it gave me this alert saying it's 2 hours and 44 minutes away, and that wasn't this wasn't getting my location wrong. It knew my location this time. It had got my location wrong earlier and thought I was in Austin, but. It had done it if you. I think when I clicked through,
that's just a bug. That's a bug.
It searched for something else entirely. Yeah, but it's an egregious bug. It misdirects you. And I've had this happen quite a lot before because a lot of you get an event that says the Maui room at Hotel X or whatever, and it finds you a restaurant called Maui that's like nowhere near it.
That I can understand, but what's happened here is a more of a bug because it knows where you're going, but it has somehow gotten directions for somewhere else, even though it has the exact address from your calendar.
Let me click on the thing again and see what address I get. Hold on.
I mean, that's more of a bug. I can understand how you when you're doing a search for a name of a place, it finds one. It should look for the one closest to you, but. That's another assumption that may not be true. You may actually be planning to go to the other Maui room. Just because it's closer doesn't mean that's the one you're going to. But this is just weirder because it has the address. It has a card that's accurate. And at the same time, it tells you to leave 2 hours and 44 minutes.
No, because it's not actually going to the address.
Right. It's going somewhere else. It's not matching the leave now to the address... So this is just that's a bug in Google Now, I think. That's just a bug.
No, it's not a bug in Google. It's Google Maps.
Maps.
So if I copy that address and search in Maps.
Well, I'm sure that even as we speak, Matt Cutts is cutting his run short to file a bug report. It is weird that if you search. So you searched for 421 Bryant.
So no, I searched for Matter Ventures 41 Bryant. I just did it, and it found me Peninsula Ventures in Redwood City instead.
It's a database bug.
So it's not a database bug. It's a we're ignoring the address and we're searching on the text, and then it searches for.
But it didn't even match the text. It has one word matching, the other one doesn't.
And then it's decided everything else was
Huh? So that happens to you a lot.
This happens to me a lot. Yeah. It generally happens when I create a calendar event. And then the calendar event has a more detailed thing than just a street address. So yeah, if you've got like Suite 300 or things like that in the address,
there's more to match. Yeah,
it's basically their address parser is useless. Huh. It prefers the text to the address parser. You get this. You can have the same effect by pasting an address into Google Maps search. So
got it.
Look out for that one. So got always it. Always double check.
Maybe they should be using Urban Engines. Eric Schmidt and Google Ventures just backed a startup called Urban Engines that wants to solve urban congestion using data intelligence. Probably all they saw was, oh, data intelligence. We need that. Oh.
Isn't that Waze? What?
Huh?
Data.
Yeah,
Waze should do that.
Well, I think this is public transit.
Ah.
Public transportation specific.
Oh, okay.
Don't take the 22, take the 24. It's using people's swipes as they get on the subway or the bus line as sensors, figuring out where people are in the system. And it sounds like...
But that's weird, because you only get entry and exit points with that. You don't get route.
So yeah. Well, what they're looking for is how crowded a bus or a train is. And I guess they might know something about wait times from that, right? Because that's when they got on.
Yeah.
Every subway system I've used has like a swipe point at the station you get on, a swipe point at the station you get off.
Right.
Well maybe not always with the get off one. I don't think New York makes you swipe on the way out.
No, New York only makes you swipe on the way in.
You put a token in the thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't know where
you're they wouldn't have it, whereas, Oyster in London makes you swipe entry and exit, and that they've given some interesting things with that data before. And the Clipper here makes you tap on. You don't have to tap off at exit, but if you don't, it assumes you went to the end of the line, which is okay if you're going north, but if you're going south, it thinks you've gone to Gilroy rather than San Jose, even though that's not possible. So it ends up charging an extra $4 if you forget.
It's getting worse in Germany now.
Oh, it's getting a lot worse.
Now, the latest insult, German officials say, we must seriously consider breaking Google up.
Yeah.
Three politicians are doing this. I was talking to a German a Google guy. Was it yesterday? Today? What day is it? At Mountain View. And yeah, it's a cynical political act, but there's a lot of that going on.
They can't break it up. It's a U.S. company.
Well, I know, but it's a cynical political act. That's the nature of it. Right. Doesn't earn any reality.
Well, no, but they can do antitrust rulings for their European homes.
Well, that's what he said. It's Sigmar Gabriel, who is Germany's minister for the economy and vice chancellor. So it's like a big shot here. And he's writing an op-ed piece in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. Did I say that right?
Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung.
Allgemeine Zeitung, which is a big daily newspaper.
Zeitung.
Zeitung.
Tsunami. Zeitung.
Zeitung.
You're spitting.
Cool whip. he writes.
German. Heute auf Deutsch.
He writes, a breakup of the kind that has been carried out for electricity and gas grids must be seriously considered here, but only as a last resort. I imagine him wagging his finger. That's why we're focusing on antitrust style regulation of internet platforms. I think breaking up Google, especially when they're not even, they're a U.S. company, seems going a little far.
Well, but they went after, the EU went after Microsoft as well. Then below that in the rundown, we also have a cynical coalition of German and French publishers led by Axel Springer, which is the company that wrote that horrible Larry's trying to create a new universe op-ed in the same newspaper. I tweeted yesterday that they should just name the paper the Brigadoon Daily, because it doesn't want to change anything. So they're trying to get the EU to reject the settlement that they've made with Google about antitrust. The EU official told them to go blow.
This is the Open Internet Project Manifesto.
Sounds great.
The Paris Declaration. European consumers and digital entrepreneurs demand ban of Google's manipulative favoring of its own services and content. It is a matter of worldwide importance. The search engine monopolist, Google. Wow. Over 90% market share. If a business cannot be found online, it cannot compete. The root of the problem is Google. I actually have said this for a while, that Google shouldn't be in the content business.
Well, they're
not. And really. Who was it? Was it Vimeo? Or no, Daily Motion was complaining. Daily Motion, the European YouTube, that when you search for video, they never show up. YouTube always shows up, a Google company. Is that not the case? What is Google's response
to
that?
If I go to Vimeo and I search for a video, does YouTube show up?
But you're on Vimeo. Well, that's the point. Google's supposed to be a search engine.
If I go to Axel Springer, that's not true anyway. If you search for their competitor, do I find their competitor? No.
Well, and whenever I search a stock listing, I get Yahoo first and Google second.
Yeah, as it should be. That's the problem, is that is Google a search engine company or a content company? Can it be both?
It's a company. And you know, it can be.
Well, then we should stop using it as a search tool, because they're not agnostic search results. But so you say they are not agnostic?
No, I did a search for net neutrality set to video, and I get some YouTube results. I get Yahoo result top. I get New York Times. I get Colbert Report. Recode.
By the way, YouTube is just a hell of a lot bigger than Vimeo. So, you know, if you're trying to search what people are watching, they ain't watching Vimeo, folks. Sorry to say it to you.
Well, let's.
They do index Vimeo. I mean, if.
Yeah.
I think it's Daily Motion, not Vimeo, that was complaining, which Daily Motion is very big. I mean, they're bigger than Vimeo. Nothing's as big as YouTube.
No.
I don't know. It's always bothered me a little bit.
You've got all these things going on in Germany. You have the let's break them up. You have the let's reject their antitrust. You have the effort to forbid them to share data across their services. We talked about last week. And then at the EU level, of course, you have the right to be forgotten stuff on top of the Street View stuff and all those other things that have been going on. It's gotten absurd over there. And you know, I was arguing to their policy guys that they should be fighting more. All these policy guys at these companies go, oh, no, we'll pull back a little bit. And I understand why they say that. And let's try to find some peace. I understand why they say that. But at some point, they've got to start fighting, I think.
Well, I love Google anyway. And I want to tell you why in a moment. They just did something that makes me love them even more.
Ooh.
Ooh. But first, ZipRecruiter.com. If you are you hiring, if you're a company or an HR representative or just a small business that needs great team members, what do you do to find the best candidates? There are, you know, how many dozens of job boards out there? Who knows which one's going to produce the best talent? Ideally, if you wanted to fill that position fast with the exact right candidate, you'd need to post on all of the top job sites. Well, that's the whole point of ZipRecruiter.com. You post to more than 50 job sites with a single click, plus social networks like LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and Google+. ZipRecruiter also makes it look better, because they will add your company logo and colors to your posting to make your job pages, you know, an extension of your business. You can add unlimited users to your account, create an instant job page on your website, include a company careers page to use as a careers link. You post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. They will actually automatically highlight the best candidates. That is so sweet. You screen them, rate them, and hire the right person fast. We used it, and we were really thrilled with the results. We got a free trial for you for 4 days if you visit ZipRecruiter.com/twig. ZipRecruiter.com/twig. If you're doing the hiring, you need ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/twig. Since Gina's not here, we're not going to do the exact change log, but I think we will talk about a few new things in Google. And the one that I'm really most excited about is this new Google, I guess it's a Google Plus feature, the new Stories.
Yes, that is Google Plus.
It's really cool.
See, it's hard not to love Google when they just give you stuff like this out of the blue.
That's their plan.
That's their evil plan.
Evil plan to give you stuff that's cool.
Hey, if this is evil, I want more of it. So what they do, if you've been posting, as I have been for some time, pictures on Google+, they will turn them. Here's how you get to it. You go to the Photos section on your Google+ menu, and then in the drop-down under More, there's this new one called Stories, along with Albums, Auto Awesome, and so forth. Stories are auto-generated stories of trips, of things you did. This is our cruise that we did in October, because I have stories going back to 2007, 7 years. I mean, it's amazing. So this is now I renamed it Adriatic Cruise, This is a 19-day story. This was all auto-generated. You can go in and you can caption photos. You can edit the photos using Google's edit tools and so forth. But these are all pictures that were posted on Google+. You can, you know, you have some control. It knows where you are. This is using that same broken system that you were just talking about, Kevin Marks. But it does at least attempt to know where you are. And we were debating exactly how. You said the Journal would do, like, here's St. Mark's Square. They would do some photo recognition and say, oh, that's St. Mark's Square. Except the result I'm getting is the hotel we stayed in. So that could be, I guess, from a check-in. It could be from location information from my phone. It could be embedded in the picture, but of course, the name of the hotel isn't embedded, just the GPS locations. So these are the nearby other things, and you can drop it down and choose another one.
The same thing for me. It showed I was in Italy recently, and it pulled up a photo in it, and it identified what was in the photo properly. But up above, it had sort of the nearest, I don't know, cafe or something.
Right.
So I can't remember whether I checked in there or.
Yeah. So it's not exactly clear.
It's kind of
clear.
Weird when you're at someone else's house and it picks some nearby business instead. I've got some photos of my son's prom photos that I took last year, and it made a nice little thing for those, but the location was like, that's not actually where.
But you can fix it. I mean, you can fix it. They've got editing capability. I have to say, I'm really fond of the. You could choose what Mormons are in the story. You can.
This is a very nice piece of work.
What I'm showing you now is completely auto-generated. With the city. In fact, I couldn't remember some of the locations my pictures were from. So it was actually a blessing because it told me where I was when we took these pictures. It shows the travel.
Yeah, it does like nice traveling animations.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
It doesn't apparently understand that I did that over water. So really, we were in a boat and we sailed around. It just does kind of a you know, generalized.
Indiana Jones style.
Yeah, but still, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this was free.
It is. I wish amazing. It would give you the option to plot all those locations on a map. I wanted to do that just to remember some of the places I'd been to.
Yeah.
But you can get that out of the location history thing.
And I was definitely not at the budget rent-a-car. I was at the beach. So
can you plot it, though? Like, can...
Well, can...
The
Google location stuff used to do that. What was the name of that service used to do that?
Location history.
Yeah. It would plot your movements around.
Okay.
But I don't...
Because someone said if you uploaded them to, I don't know, Panoramio or something, it would do it, but it didn't work.
I have the dullest one imaginable. I was at a conference at the Gates Foundation, and I was just me taking pictures of people's slides.
Well, they're not all. They're only can, you know, they can't. They can only work with what they're given.
They can't work magic.
Yeah. I've got like I shot my son's hockey game, which means I've got 20 minutes, 30 minutes of people playing hockey, and it's not very good at picking the highlights out of those at all. You know,
right.
It doesn't. You know, clearly it should look for when everyone's cheering or something and find the goals, but it doesn't. It just shows you random bits of people going past.
What's interesting about this to me is that Bill Gross talks about the problem. One of the businesses he talks about launching is the one to solve the problem of too many photos. Mm-hmm. And us going, just as Google treats Gmail, and we're not going to get the empty inbox, we're not going to get to organized picture albums like my wife has loyally done over the years with the family, right? So how are they going to take signals and get nearer to that of organizing too many photos? And that's what this is really about. So I just, one of the albums looked at it and said, oh yeah, I forgot about this photo. I forgot about that photo. Yeah. And it surfaced them in a way that gave them more value.
And I think they're far closer to doing that than just about anybody. You might think iPhoto, Apple should be able to do that. As far as I can tell, they're not even trying. All the
Apple
photo enhancements
know me the way Google knows me.
Right.
That's the key.
And all the photo enhancements they've added, like the one where it creates an auto panorama, like it created a bunch of panoramas from my trip that I didn't
amazing?
Even realize.
I know.
I didn't even realize I had taken all those pictures in
I
a row.
I know. And so I think they're holding back because they could do face recognition.
They could do
more, and I bet they will over time.
And I hope they do, because I would like to be able to see all of the photos of my daughter over the last 15 years. Well, I can't go through and tag every single photo of her. Like, that would take years, so yeah. I just don't do it. But if someone could do it for me, that would be a huge, huge favor.
Yeah.
I think just
the... But the Germans are all going to say, that's creepy. It knows your daughter. Right. It knows how she grows.
Right.
Well, the what's it called? Picasso used to do that. The Picasso client, you do the facial recognition with it, and then you tell it who people are.
Right.
And then it had a bunch of things that it would do, like time lapses or merges of different images of that person, things like that. So basically, it would do you like a slideshow where it aligned the face and made the background move behind them. Hmm. So there was some quite neat stuff that was built into that app. I haven't actually used that for a bit, but that was quite impressive.
And I know Facebook has tried to do some too. When I upload photos, it tries to do face recognition, but you know, I need to give someone 30 gigs of photos and say, just auto recognize everything in here, please.
Well, that's what's the fun thing about this is I've been apparently uploading photos because this does include Picasso since 2007. So there are a ton of albums here. I can only imagine what the total aggregate CPU and server usage is for doing stuff like this. Is this because Google, like H&R Block, has extra computing time, and they said, well, what else could we use those servers
they do,
for? Yeah. Yeah, some Slack.
I imagine they do.
I wonder how they allocate that. That's really interesting, processing time they have and how they throw the stuff in.
I mean, they put this together, and they did it instantly, it seems like.
They have a budgeting model internally for computer time, and you can pick priorities depending on what you're doing. So something like this, they'd run it as a low-priority job in the background, you know, behind search indexing and things. But there's... You know, internally, there's a budget system that you apply for machines for your project for. So they would have had to have a debate to get.
Is there a bureaucracy that adjudicates that?
Yeah. Well, there was when I was there.
But I mean, photo recognition stuff, you can chop that up into little bits and do it in the background in between, you know, milliseconds between.
Well, this is all chopped up and used across multiple machines. I mean, the challenge for the photo and the video stuff is moving the data around. You don't actually want to spread it across lots of servers. You want to make it near the data. Because the really computer-intensive stuff is the stuff they do with YouTube, where they do the image analysis of every frame and then de-wobble them.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Color correct and things like that. But that was... I was saying, you know, I was doing, like, you know, shooting with the phone handheld shots of my son playing hockey, and they're not great. But the thing is, it's a 1080p camera, so... you can feed it through YouTube, and it just takes all the wobble out. And it looks like, you know, I'm sitting there with a phone in gimbals doing that. It's really quite impressive.
Google now is adding bill reminder integration into its cards. So I guess it's from email. It sees you get bills in your email, and it'll say, "Hey, that bill's due."
It's called a wife.
It's creepy. That's called creepy. Hey, Leo, don't you remember the power went out last month when you didn't pay the PG&E bill? I think you really should consider paying it now. It would save me some embarrassment.
Is that like the thing from last week where they tell you how to cancel your subscription?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're rolling this stuff out fast now, aren't they? You know, the pace will accelerate because the artificial intelligence minds that run Google are now teaching themselves, and they're going
self-aware.
To get fed. Yeah, they're self-aware, basically.
Well, yesterday when I spoke at Google about privacy, before me, Ray Kurzweil spoke.
Oh, that must have been fun.
It was fun. I presume it's not off the record.
What did he say?
Well, just the stuff you'd expect him to say, talking about his theories about all this. And somebody asked him whether, you know, you're going to, and it's kind of the ultimate creepy question, are we going to get to the point where Google, where the computer, right? Because if your cognizance is in the cloud, and it knows what you know, and so on and so forth. Will it anticipate what you want before you want it? And he got a laugh, and he said, "No, because you're going to change, and we're never going to get to that point."
Right.
So we found the limits of the singularity, I think, which is comforting.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
Because humans change, but the machines won't like that. So that's another reason for them to get rid of
us. Well, part of the argument too is that if in the singularity our consciousness, I'll get this all screwed up, but if our consciousness is allied with machines, the machines will get faster and faster and faster, but the machines can't anticipate the machines. Machines will be faster than anyway. I'm not going
to... Well, you should watch Triangulation we did on Monday with a guy named James Barrett. He's a documentarian who did a lot of interviews, including Kurzweil, Peter Norvig, who is Google CTO, or he's a very, very smart guy. And his book is called Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. And basically, he said that, you know, as soon as these machines start designing themselves, it's over for humans. So we got to start planning for this now. And a lot of Google people quoted in here because apparently Google is kind of aware of this. Kurzweil, I asked Kurzweil about this years ago, and he said, oh, don't worry. Machines are going to be smarter than us, but they're going to think of us as their parents. So they aren't going to wipe us out. They're just going to tolerate us. Yeah, sure. That'll happen.
Yeah, no one ever got on badly with their parents. How could that ever be a problem?
Barrett is not an AI researcher, but he talked to an awful lot of them. I told him, my experience interviewing people like Jeff Hawkins and Ray Kurzweil, they're all pretty, sanguine about the idea that, their machines are going to be smarter than us, but it's no big deal. He said, well, you're talking to the wrong guys because about 80% of the AI researchers I talked to said, this is a crisis that's going to hit us in this century because there's no reason for these intelligent machines to let us live. Why?
What about the three laws?
I asked him about that. He says that was a fictional device. And by the way, remember all the stories Asimov's three laws are included in ended badly.
True.
We forget that part.
I think iRobot was the best. The computers had to enslave us to save us because we were killing ourselves.
Right. So they obeyed the law.
They were doing us a favor. Right.
It was a very interesting interview. That's all I can say. And you should watch it. Triangulation this week. And I don't know what to say. I mean, basically he said you can't stop it. So what we should do is, spend some energy now thinking about it. There's even a debate among researchers whether we should go full speed ahead towards this singularity. He says the people who believe that think, what we should do is make these machines smart now before we're too smart and we'll give them too many weapons, too many tools. If these machines achieve super intelligence now, they won't have things like nanotech. But if you wait 20 years, they'll have nanotech. They have all this stuff, and they just go, flick us away. You guys got nothing to say? You don't want to
defend? No.
I'm kind of depressed now.
It's very depressing. But he says, but I think he's wrong. It's not too late. I think he's wrong. Meanwhile, Google's added bill reminders into our Google Now cards.
Which is handy.
We are the frogs in the boiling pot of water.
Well, but you were right. You made a good point about Google. It keeps offering you these free things that are super useful and really appealing. And so you're like, yeah, this is great. I'm going
to
do this.
You're about to complain about that?
And it gets you across the sort of creepy line.
Right.
Like Google Now is perfect.
It's not the creepy line. So,
So Google Now follows me and tracks my behavior.
They're going to burn you in effigy when the machines take over. They're going to go, it was Jarvis's fault.
But it gives you such cool things that you get sucked into it.
Right.
Yeah, it's
the candy.
Yeah. It's a Venus flytrap.
So your wife gave you a nice dinner before you got married. And you fell in love with her.
Well,
there's got to be some reason for this.
Well, yeah, but my wife doesn't have 800,000 servers at her disposal.
No, she's got something better. She's got a wife's brain.
And, Faust had a pretty good deal too, right?
Who?
Faust.
Faust got a good deal.
That seemed like
Faust
a good deal.
Faust got a good deal. Sure.
Until
the thermostat stopped working and the house burned down.
Google, turn down the thermostat. I'm afraid I can't do that, Dave.
I'm sorry, Dave. You're merely a human, Dave.
Have you seen the... it's not HP. What's the other company that makes thermostats?
First Alert.
Honeywell. So Honeywell is advertising like crazy. They're listening,
they
talking
do the same thing.
Thermostat now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can make our thermostat talk, too. It's not that hard.
I now have this flash of every appliance in my house is talking to me.
Yeah, I
wanting
want
my
that.
Attention.
The
toast is done.
I'm sorry,
is it
Jeff.
A little hot in here?
You know it's not good for you when you set the thermostat higher than 67.
You should put a sweater on, Jeff.
Just put a sweater on,
the
Jeff.
The environment. Do you want to destroy the Earth?
You don't want to hurt planet Earth. I still need it. We need selenium for our switches. Open the pod bay doors. No, Jeff. Anything else in the change log? There was a lot of stuff, but it wasn't like I didn't go crazy over it. Google Play is accepting
under
PayPal.
Android, Leo. Yeah. This is change log like 9 wowsy new features for Google Plus and Android.
Is that a word? Wowsy?
I did. It's not wowsy. It's my fault.
Is that a thing?
We saw the Auto Awesome stories. That was one.
Auto Awesome movies.
Auto Awesome movies.
You can create animated GIFs.
Wait a minute. Let's just show you an example. So here's an Auto Awesome movie. We'll take your movies, kind of like the HTC Zoe highlights feature, and turn them in. I don't think I have any of these yet.
Yeah, so this is the one that makes really bad ones from...
Really bad musical.
Right.
Yeah, these are not. I'm sorry, but this is unusually good. But Google made this one.
Sure.
Yeah. And for mine, it's like I've got hockey games and I've got concerts. So it makes these like cut-ups that mess up the music or mess up the order of flow in the game. You're like, what?
So in order to see these, you've got to go to Photos, and then it would be under Auto Awesome, or would it be under Videos?
I think you have to look at under Auto Awesome, and then it shows you the video ones as well.
Yeah. Maybe not. Let's go to Videos. Yeah, no, I don't. I can't tell. Oh, they would have like a little thing on them.
They have a little like magic.
A little magic icon. The little fairy dust icon on them. All right. Well, the ones I actually have seen these now, as I remember, and they're not particular. Okay, here's one it made. This was a Vister. No, that's not it, is it? Oh, that's a Motion Auto Awesome. Okay, I want a Video Auto Awesome. I guess I don't have any. So disappointed.
It is kind of cheesy, especially some of the
weird
music.
Sparkly and snow ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hasselhoff was good. All right, well, let's see. We'll go back to the article and see what else is new. There's a lot of things.
Snow, that's for sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things there.
There's a lot of new stuff. Where did I put the audio?
Where'd I go?
Says it supports large photo libraries now.
You can create animated GIFs, photo booth style images on demand. Just tap the new plus button in Photos and select either motion
or
mix.
There's been times when I wanted to put photos together and you try to encourage Auto Awesome to do it for you, and now you're manual awesome.
Just drag. Okay, so now you can scroll through all the photos as well as highlights by date. Profiles now display total content views on both Android and the web. So you can see how many people are looking at your stuff. A new navigation menu makes it easy. This is Stephen Groves' post here.
Actually, Dave Besbris.
I'm sorry. He reshared Dave Besbris's. And Dave Besbris is the guy in charge now at Google Plus.
No, that's...
He took over from Vic.
Bez. That's Bez. Right.
Yeah. He took over from Vic.
I was trying to think that Dave was not his name because it was Bez, but yes.
Bez. We call him Bez. So follow Bez if you want to know what's new and different and exciting. Wow, that's a lot of new features. It goes on and on. I'm telling you, maybe it was good that Vic left. Maybe Vic was the roadblock on this.
Well, and Dave got all this done in 10 days.
Right, he did.
It's been in the hopper.
So the new app will roll out gradually to Google Play if you haven't got it yet. Expect it.
Yeah, I haven't checked to see if I have it yet.
I didn't have it yesterday, but I may have it now. A new Google Glass app. Let's know. We talked about that. The Nod. Google Maps adds elevation profiles. This is kind of cool. When you're on a bike route, it'll tell you how bad it's going to be.
I was just trying to get that to work, and now Google Maps says it can't find my house. So clearly doesn't like me complaining about it.
It does not like you, Kevin.
Kevin.
You've been deleted.
But I think this is pretty cool.
I do like their bike routing. I use that a lot.
And it'll show you the elevation that you're going to go over.
But it only shows you it on the computer, not on the phone.
Oh. So
like, yeah. Actually, on my bike on the San Francisco street, I have to get off my bike, get my laptop out, and see the program.
But what it's for is before you leave, you look at it and you see if you want to go that way.
Right.
It assumes that, that
by the time you're on your bike, you probably know what the elevation is.
Actually, that would be handy if it was on the phone, because I rented a bike in San Francisco. I did not plan my route.
Right.
And I wound up basically going, you know, vertical for about the first.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You don't want to do that. I did something even dumber, Matthew. When I lived in San Francisco, I bought a moped.
Nice.
But it can't get up the hills, right?
You have exactly.
To, you can't you get have to walk this heavy worthless. Thing up the hills.
Yeah, right. It was the stupidest thing I've ever bought.
That's weird.
You need a more powerful moped. So you're telling me the Vespa can't go up those steep hills?
Well, it, does, I think it only shows you profiles if they're quite long routes.
Oh.
It's not showing me ones around town ones. But if I say, oh, cycle from San Jose to San Francisco, it'll give me it.
Yes. You can't get there from here.
I figured out how to wipe out about 3/4 of the population of San Francisco if you want to.
Yeah.
Just make it snow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that even was my favorite thing little. About the
What's
the
this white stuff on Telegraph Hill?
That was the comment in the Google self-driving car story last week, is that they can, they've never driven in snow and they get very confused by rain. It's like, these were clearly programmed by Californians, weren't they? Like,
yes, but exactly Volvo like says by 2017, you're going to be driving a self-driving car.
Seattle, apparently.
That's not good. Our show today brought to you by Shutterstock.com. I love Shutterstock. Anybody who uses images, whether it's on a menu, in your blog posting, in your presentations, you should know about Shutterstock.com. I know there are many competing companies offering you royalty-free images, but Shutterstock has an amazing selection, 37,268,513 royalty-free stock images. They added 270,000 new stock images this week alone, all beautifully curated, many from professional photographers and artists. But this is the thing, in my opinion, that sets Shutterstock aside from everybody else. They have the best search anywhere. Really, really sophisticated. Okay, so let's say Jeff wants to illustrate privacy. Now, normally, you couldn't. Privacy is not a thing. How do you search for privacy? But if you... Oh, look at that. There you go. Privacy, wow. Privacy, privacy. Now, let's say you want to search for, I don't know, German privacy. I don't know. Is it going to find anything? I don't know. Let's find out. Yes, it did. It's got German. I don't know why she's in this, but...
her a dog on the side.
She's, you will not violate
that's
privacy?
A German Shepherd privacy.
German Shepherd.
Do nicht stören. Do not disturb. So I... Datenschutz. So you see, this is amazing. I mean, really incredible. Maybe it's because they are in more than a dozen countries. That's probably why you can get German privacy in stock photos, illustrations, and vector art. You can narrow it down by color. They have a color wheel. The search refinements are amazing. You could say with people, without people, editorial, non-editorial. The color wheel means you can actually say, I only want blue German privacy pictures. I mean, it's just incredible. But you need this because you're doing your blog post. You want to have an illustration. It's perfect. Don't forget the footage tab at Shutterstock.com, too. Incredible royalty-free video. A lot of it with alpha channels, which means you can, on a, you know, if you have, oh, that one's not available. If you have it on a green screen, you can, it'll look gorgeous. Here's the thing. I want you to sign up for an account at Shutterstock. You don't need to use a credit card or pay for it. But once you have an account, you can get the free photo and vector of the week, the free footage. You can also use the Lightbox tool to save stuff that you see for inspirational purposes or to share with a colleague or client. And when you decide to buy, all I ask is use our offer code TWIG514, and that'll get you 20%. They have, of course, package deals, but the one I use is a subscription. We get 25 images a week, you know, for the company. A day, I'm sorry. 25 images a day for the company. And that really is useful for all of our work. You know, our presentations, our media packages, things like that. Shutterstock.com, free to try. If you decide to buy, use the offer code TWIG514, and that will save you 20% on your first purchase. And if your first purchase is $1 billion, as the YouTube purchase of Twitch is, that's like $200 million.
Can you explain Twitch to me?
Yeah, I love Twitch. You've not used Twitch? Oh, you're that's right. You're over 30.
I don't like games. I grew up, Leo.
Game streaming.
Justin Kahn, remember him? He did the. This was crazy. He did Justin TV. It started off with him with a camera on him.
Right.
Remember those early Justin videos when you follow him around? And then he had other people doing it. And then that inspired him because he had so much traffic. He had to learn about servers and stuff. It inspired him to create Justin.tv, which we use, a lot of companies use to distribute video, live streaming or otherwise. And then they had a brilliant idea. How old is Twitch.tv? A couple of years old now? They had a really good idea. Why stream just, stuff like this? Because most of the video on YouTube is gameplay video. So Twitch is just you watch people play games.
I cannot imagine anything more stultifyingly boring than that.
My daughter does that all the time.
Yeah, everybody.
She watches Minecraft videos all the time.
So these two guys, actually, they've got a pretty good setup. These two guys are playing this new game, which isn't out yet, and everybody's very excited about it. So that's them down there. They must have a TriCaster or something. They're green screening themselves onto it.
It's just XSplit.
Oh, XSplit will do that? Yeah. That's awesome. And then they're describing their play.
Which channel is this?
It was just on the front page. It's GameSpot doing it.
Yeah, it's GameSpot.
So these are pros. But there's lots of individuals. So you pick the game you want. Look at World of Warcraft. There are how many World of Warcraft channels are there? Quite a few.
Oh,
so you
God, get life, people.
Oh, well, Jeff.
It's no weirder watching sport, is it?
It's exactly like that.
Well, that's I rest my case.
Yeah, no, I didn't watch sport either. But
this guy, most of these have, a few dozen viewers. This guy's got 1,000 people watching him. He has a total of 11 million views. He's got 100,000 likes, and here comes an ad. So he's making money off of this. I know a lot of people who want to make their living playing video games, and for them, this is it.
Yeah.
The rumor, this was broken by Variety Sunday afternoon, and apparently they're early stages in the negotiations, but the rumor is that Google's been negotiating to buy them for $1 billion, which is actually a good deal. In fact,
good for Justin. I mean, I'm happy as can be for Justin. He's a real pioneer.
The real question is, why isn't Microsoft buying them? Microsoft already has a relationship with them. You can broadcast on Twitch direct from your Xbox One. And many of these games are Microsoft games. This would be a smart move for Microsoft. I have to think that there's a bidding war going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear about Twitch Plays Pokemon?
Yeah. We talked a lot about that. So they wired up a chat room on Twitch.tv so that you could be in the chat room and give commands to, like Pokemon Red. It was like a really old Pokemon game, yeah. Right? And so there's tens of thousands of people in this chat room pressing up, 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 up. And what chat, originally the way it was random from the people who hitting a key would just randomly pick an action. So what you get is a pretty random gameplay. And then they added the democracy mode where people could vote and the highest vote getter. So it would switch in and out of democracy mode. Is that still going on, the Pokemon?
No, I was just looking it up. I think it finished.
They played
March.
Several games.
It said peak simultaneous participation, 121,000 users. Over
Jeff,
a million people participated.
If you think that what we were talking about is boring, this is really boring.
And I met with Eric Martin, who's the general manager of Reddit. And so he talked about the Reddit. There's a Reddit side of that. There's a live Reddit, a Reddit live thread embedded in it, which is their new product.
Here's the final Elite Four run and ending, including the final battle with the Elite Four. Ladies and gentlemen, the excitement was palpable. So on the right, Jeff, these are people saying, this is what we want to do. And as you can see, it's pretty anarchic.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It was a social experiment as much as anything.
I think it was fascinating. It almost brought Twitch to its knees. This was 3 months ago.
Like watching a live edit of Wikipedia. 100,000 editing.
So they're not in they're in anarchy mode right now. You'll see up at the top it says democracy, anarchy. And is that, Chad, is that bar showing how close to democracy?
Right. So you can see the arrow. It's moving towards democracy, but they need to pass that second grayer bar in order to get into that
mode. They're never going to win this game until they get to democracy mode because it's too chaotic.
I believe they won it in anarchy.
You're kidding.
No.
Really? Interesting. Fascinating. And sort of irritating at the same time.
Well, the music is incredibly irritating.
But the chat, you can't, this is only the chat with just the commands in it. The actual chat room
had, there's other chat as well.
Right. There was, I mean, there was basically the Twitch chat, right?
Right.
And they had named every single Pokemon. They had favorites. They had...
It was really, it was a social experiment.
Yeah.
You nailed it, Matt.
So Red is over, but they continue to play other games.
Oh, yeah.
So they're continuing with Pokemon Crystal.
Yeah. It's incredible. I think this is one of the most interesting things, and the popularity of this is no surprise to me. I think this is very, very interesting. Lots of ways to monetize. They've got promoted games, as you can see, GameSpot, which is a game website. It has a promoted channel on the front page. Lots of ways to monetize this. Maybe
I actually asked my
look
daughter,
at this Baja Blast takeover.
Stacking Nazi hats on top of I asked my daughter why she watches. Because we were somewhere and she was watching someone play Minecraft. And I said, well, why are you watching them instead of playing it? And she said, well, they have all kinds of mods that I don't have or that I can't run. And so I'm watching them play.
Right.
Because they have these special mods.
But also, if you had those mods and you wanted to learn, I mean, that's why Chad's show is so successful, the OMG Craft, is because that's how you learn. In fact, I was playing Bleck the other day and everybody in the chat room says, oh, no, why are you trying to win this game? Just go watch the YouTube videos. It'll tell you how to play. Well, that's what's the point of playing a game? But people love that. Who's the number one talent on YouTube? It's PewDiePie. What does he do? He plays through Minecraft and other games and swears a lot. Is PewDiePie funny, at least?
To that to that demographic?
To 11-year-olds.
Yeah. Depends.
Michael gets up in the morning. First thing he does is start watching those videos. And the last thing he does when he goes to bed is watch these videos. I mean, that's and he, you know, I hear him chuckling. PewDiePie has 1,700 videos. He has currently, 26 million subscribers.
Wow.
26,
Jesus.
Almost 27 million subscribers. Should we just pick one of these and play it? I mean, I know we'll have to blip it.
You should do Goat Simulator. Search for Goat Simulator.
We that love that good. Game.
Sounds good.
PewDiePie Goat.
You can search on his channel if you go to his... Oh, yeah, don't worry about it. You got it.
Isn't there... There's a young kid whose dad helps him make videos of game reviews.
Really?
I don't remember.
And he's huge?
Yeah, he's huge. He's like 9 or something.
Almost 8 million people have watched this video.
You ever feel like being a goat? Me too. Let's play. I am a goat. I know I can lick things.
This is the biggest star on YouTube today.
What was that? Oh,
that
okay.
Guy.
I become a ragdoll. I get points for becoming a ragdoll.
He's what, Swedish?
Hi there, sir. Oh,
something like that. Oh, geez.
Why? I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. What the?
He's not even funny.
What were they on when they made this?
The biggest star on YouTube today. So that's why they're going to buy Twitch.tv.
He is Swedish. Felix Arvid Ulf Gjellberg.
I don't get it. This is why I despair after 37 years in media.
Maybe they're trying to buy Yulia and they just misspelled it. You know, they've got it auto-corrected.
They wanted Twit and they thought they were getting Twit instead. By the way, according to The Verge, Microsoft was in there bidding away. The company has only raised $20 million, so if they get sold for $1 billion, there's somebody making some money there. They have not yet even turned a profit. By the way, that's the key to getting a big acquisition deal. Otherwise, they multiply your profits times some arbitrary number.
Is this Justin's company?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, good for Justin. I mean, there's a lot of other people at this point.
Yeah.
But he was the founder.
Just one note on PewDiePie.
Does that mean Justin gets a cut?
I don't know. Maybe she was like the second person on Justin TV, right?
Maybe she still has sock.
Justine's doing okay. I wouldn't worry about iJustine.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia, PewDiePie moved from Italy to the UK for better internet connectivity.
That's why I'm moving to Austin, actually.
These economic migrants.
And there I rest my case for why we need an open internet. The PewDiePie drain. Ladies and gentlemen, we can't afford to lose any PewDiePies. Twitch is said to have, according to The Verge, Sam Byford and Ben Popper writing, Twitch is said to have evaluated possible bids and decided on Google's YouTube as the best fit. to help the company scale in line with its massive growth over the recent years. Well, it is a natural fit. I mean, it's, you know, they're doing the same thing. Of course, they have plenty of servers.
Well, there's a Microsoft fit with Xbox as well. I mean, I can see why Microsoft would bid
for it. Oh, yeah. No, in fact, according to this article, Microsoft and others have made serious approaches to Twitch.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I think it does make more sense for, because the problem, that would be actually be a problem if it's.
Yeah, because then it would be Xbox, not, and none of the other stuff. So. YouTube apparently introduced an API at GDC last year, but the game community didn't embrace YouTube. It was Twitch that really got the mind share.
Wow, this says Twitch accounted for 44% of all U.S. live streaming traffic by volume.
Okay, there you go. Enough said.
They're number three in terms of bandwidth used.
After Netflix, wow.
After Netflix
YouTube.
And YouTube.
Well, they're on YouTube.
No. They're not.
No.
They're on Justin. They're basically the Justin.tv platform.
Right. Basically, Justin.tv got taken over by video games, and they said, we don't want this on Justin.tv.
Right. So
we're going to make, yeah. And you know, we need offices to be able to mitigate all this gaming.
So right now, there are almost a quarter of a million people watching League of Legends games being played.
The cost must be huge.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. I think that's probably the reason that they're entertaining an acquisition offer right now.
Yeah, that's a crap ton of volume.
Yeah. And only somebody like Google or Facebook could really reasonably. I guess Microsoft has the server capacity, but that's a big deal. And by the way, it's a very long tail, and that's the other thing. This is long tail stuff. You've got a few big PewDiePie types, but really these big numbers in traffic come from thousands of smaller ones. Apple's number three.
Yeah, I misspoke. I wanted
Twitch
to
is number four, beating Hulu, Facebook, Valve, Amazon, Pandora, and Tumblr for live streaming video.
Bigger than Hulu.
That's not saying that much. Let's be honest.
No, that's true. But still.
Well, but Hulu is the repository
of
all these big networks.
Right.
Yeah. And watching somebody else play a game is bigger than that.
Yep.
I know you don't understand it, but truthfully, this is it.
Well, 25 million is pretty big in network terms, isn't it?
Huge.
Does anything get 25 million viewers these days?
God, no. I mean, MSNBC is sometimes lucky to break six figures.
Yeah, but a big
10 million is big.
A big network television show can still expect to get 10 to 15, maybe even top 20.
But if he's got 25 million subscribers, he's already, like, naturally above that.
Well, they're not all watching at the same time.
No. Well, who knows? They have no lives. They may be.
Well, no, you see, okay, yeah, but those are different figures. Okay, so the subscribers and the live streaming.
Right.
Got it. Yeah.
See, it's still funny to me enough. I know I'm just weird here. I know most of the world plays games. I know I'm weird at this. I'm not trying to make fun of the rest of the world. I know I'm weird, right? But playing the game myself, at least I kind of get it. Watching somebody else play it?
I got the most views that we've ever gotten on this network, probably, were people playing video games. Father Robert playing the Goat Simulator, me playing Skyrim. When Brushwood first played the Lords of the Old Republic, when these new games come out, there's a lot of interest. And if you have, frankly, PewDiePie shouldn't be doing that well. If you have somebody really funny, really interesting doing this, it appeals to everyone. It's really fun.
And that's how you learn how to play.
And I think kids do. Why do you think PewDiePie does so well, Chad? You're our local expert on YouTube.
I truly do think that his humor is what people want. What you saw was the start. You know, there's things get absurd.
So he is
things,
funny.
I believe there. Yes,
he's funny to a kid.
He gets funny.
Really, the truth is, YouTube is a kid network. It is.
Well, absolutely. I mean,
it
that's
is Nickelodeon.
Any of the demographics.
Well,
say.
Yeah.
But also he. And he's grown so much with the medium that he can now put resources that other people don't have. All that editing, almost no one else can do that quick style of editing for 6 hours of content because
he does a lot of editing. It's not live streaming.
Well, I mean,
so
you saw
what he
did.
Work well on Twitch.
No, but I thought the point you were making was on YouTube, the best content is video game content.
Point. That's why YouTube's. Right. Saying, wow, we better get in this live streaming thing.
Yeah, I was saying just the other day, I think YouTube is a place for video games because that's the only type of content that can make money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's the way things propagate. So Minecraft, a big chunk of how that propagates is people watching videos of people building other things in Minecraft and going off to build them. And there's that sort of weird loop that goes around like that. But that's not exactly true.
A lot of the very, very popular stuff is Let's Plays, is watching someone else play the game. Yeah. And it's because they connect with that personality, that it's entertainment. It's another form of entertainment.
It's not like Yahtzee Croshaw does those brilliant, very funny video game reviews that are 5 minutes long that are a bit more classic thing.
Right.
You know, I've watched those and enjoyed those.
Those are more adult, believe it or not.
But I suppose, it's like what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're just talking to mics and we don't edit this down to a show. So, see what I mean?
This is not youth-oriented content. Here's John Oliver on his show last week tonight talking about the right to be forgotten.
Let's talk about something else. The internet. In Europe this week, there was some potentially significant news.
It is said the internet never forgets. Until now, that is. In a huge ruling, the highest court in Europe ruled that Google and other search operators like it must delete search results if they are requested. They're calling it the right to be forgotten. What if 10 million people suddenly approach Google and say, by the way, you know that story about me running over a squirrel on my bicycle while drunk and naked? I want that removed.
Okay. That is way too specific to be something that he just came up with off the top of his head.
The case originated in Spain. A man there argued that when a Google search turned up an auction notice of his repossessed home from back in 1998, that somehow that being out there was a violation of his privacy rights.
That Spanish man is Mario Costeja Gonzalez. This is his photo, which was on an article from the New York Times about his crusade to remove links mentioning his debts from 1998. In doing so, he is now world famous for being that Spanish guy with debts from 1998. The only thing I know about him is the only thing he didn't want me to know.
There's the point.
Well said.
It took us a while to get there, but that was the point.
So worth it. It is a good point.
The right to be forgotten. I played way too much of that, and I'm sure we're going to get a takedown now from HBO. That's the new John Oliver show. On HBO, and I love John Oliver, so I give him a plug. Let's see. Google and Apple did we talk about this last week? Have buried the hatchet?
No, I don't think we did, actually.
This is...
so many shows, you can't remember where you're talking about.
I've talked about it many times, but probably...
Can I tell the story?
It's a great story, because Motorola and Apple were suing one another. They said, you know what, this isn't going well for anybody. Let's just drop the case. No licensing. In fact, we've agreed to work together in areas of patent reform.
Well, that's the main thing, is they realize that their common enemy is not each other. It's the trolls. And they're only encouraging troll behavior.
I'm hopeful that this means that Apple has recognized that even though they've won two cases now against Samsung, that the awards are diminishing. Samsung, in this case, actually won a little bit back from Apple. Well, and it's just bad PR, and it reveals stuff that Apple doesn't want revealed in discovery. All of this is just bad for Apple all around.
But Apple's not, Samsung's not in the settlement. It's just Google and Apple, right?
Yeah, but I'm hoping that this is the beginning of a kind of general detente. And, of course, the thing you want to see is if Rockstar goes away. That's the Apple-Microsoft consortium that is really the Nortel patents and is designed to go after.
The problem with this is that this settlement was used by certain commentators to say, well, this shows the patent system's working because they've settled it. It's like, no, they spent $200 million in legal fees trying to fight it first. And the depressing news today is that Senator Leahy has refused to bring the patent reform bill forward.
He's not refused. I mean, his point was he doesn't think he had the votes to do it.
Right.
His head of staff has just former head of staff has just gone to work for the patent troll lobbyist group.
Oh, really?
There's a certain suspicious revolving door thing.
That's a little suspicious. Well. Yeah. He had sponsored the bill, Patrick Leahy. Yes. I think he's a good senator from Vermont on these issues. He said in his statement there was a lack of sufficient support. We've been working for almost a year with countless stakeholders on legislation to address the problem of patent trolls who are misusing the patent system. This is a real problem facing businesses in Vermont and across the country. We have repeated concerns. The House passed bill went beyond the scope of addressing patent trolls and would have had severe unintended consequences on legitimate patent holders. This is the issue, of course, is what is a patent troll?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, but this is the problem, is that a lot of these alleged legitimate patent holders aren't. They're people who hold...
They're non what we call non-practicing entities. They don't actually make anything. They probably didn't even hold the original patent. They bought it.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. I think there are certain litmus tests that you can use to see if somebody's really a troll or just somebody legitimately.
Yeah,
well, the guy who won the intermittent windshield wiper case against Ford. I mean, that was an amazing story. It took decades to resolve, and he had a real case. He wasn't a patent troll.
But, you know, the point is that the reforms, the patent law is out of balance. It doesn't currently make sense. It is causing us billions of dollars of unnecessary costs every year. To say, oh, the balance isn't quite right to fix it. No, the thing is out of balance. Pass that bill. You can always pass another bill later if it overreaches. And that's the problem here. And the fact that he gets to veto this thing when it passed the House by 200 and something to
that's
50
kinda
or something.
Yeah, that's a flaw in the system, obviously.
Our Jeff Roberts has...
325 to 91 it passed the House.
Yeah.
Jeff has a source that said... the process failed because Leahy didn't want to choose winners and losers. So, in other words, he lost.
So he's chosen a winner, and he's chosen the trolls as winners.
This 42 state and territorial attorneys general sent letters in support. Google and Microsoft and hundreds of other companies urged senators to pass this bill. But Leahy says there was insufficient support. All right. Yeah, I'll blame Leahy. I mean, I think you're right.
He has said he has veto rights over this. He's applied his veto, and that's the problem.
Right. That is an awfully powerful thing. One guy to kill this bill. Yeah. And we do, of course, feel like this is a very important bill for us here at TWIT. The podcast community is threatened by a patent troll, this is personal.
Yes.
Oh, well. And I guess that's it, right? I mean, we'll talk about this next year.
They're going to try and reintroduce it in the next session. But the point is we've now got to wait for that to go
through.
It's not the end of the fight, but it's still really annoying because it looked like we were getting really close. Yeah. And the thing is, there were several bills introduced and they were consolidated to this one and now they've been shut down en masse. Mm. So there's...
Wow, that's a lot of power.
There's a lot of action going on this year. Yeah. And I've been following a lot of it. There's fixpatents.org is good. That's run by Engine Advocacy, and that gives you ways to contact your senators about it. I would still recommend doing that. Go there and complain to your senators to say what just happened. We were looking, you know, we thought you were about to fix this. You've let us down.
Fixpatents.org. Very disappointing. And now that you mention it, I'm not too happy with Patrick Leahy. Huge cost.
Yeah.
Huge cost to these. It costs to innovation, costs to everybody, not just the companies that are sued. Google Glass being handed out to medical students at UC Irvine. Several medical institutions have been testing Glass, but the School of Medicine at the University of California, Irvine, is issuing Glass to its students, fully incorporating Glass into its four-year curriculum. First and second-year students will use the device in anatomy and clinical skills. Third and fourth year students will wear glass during their hospital rotations. Get ready for a doctor to come into your room wearing glass.
I think it's a great idea.
Creepy.
Well, he's wearing a stethoscope. What the hell, you know? That's interesting. That might be a very... they don't say exactly what software they're going to use or how they're going to use it. I hope it's more than just taking selfies. But is there specialized medical software? There must be.
I'm sure there will be.
There will be.
If there isn't.
Glass
that's what they're trying to get.
Did lose its lead electrical engineer. Adrian Wong took a job with Oculus Rift.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Mm-hmm. He was the lead electrical engineer on Glass. He'd been there since December 2010. He was came from Sandia National Labs. He's now.
I know. I don't want my doctor to wear Oculus Rift.
Where are you? Where are you? I know you're here somewhere. wow. Well, he holds 10, by the way.
Matthew, actually, they do. Because when you do the surgery.
The arthroscopic surgery, yeah.
Arthroscopic, that's how robotic arthroscopic. And that's why, basically, that's he may have been better off in Oculus Rift, actually.
This guy, Wong, was listed his on Angel List his time at Sandia as being a former spy gadget maker for the U.S. government. He has 10 patents, including wearable computer with nearby object response, wearable computer with superimposed controls and instructions for external device, method to autofocus on near-eye display, and unlocking a screen using eye-tracking information. This guy's kind of a wizard. Wow. Well, I think this is, there's probably quite a bit of movement back and forth all the time.
I have to say, speaking about the medical thing, one of the first sort of Google Glass implementations that I thought really made a lot of sense was the doctor who used it while he was operating.
Yeah.
And it brought up a bunch of patient information that was crucial to him while he was operating. He would have had to stop the operation, go to his computer, pull up the patient's info. That I mean, it all happened while he was doing it. That makes total sense to me.
Can you? But I mean, how much detail can you? You can't. The text has to be pretty big. You can't put a lot of lines of text on glass, can you?
No, and he was looking at things like contraindicated sort of medicine or sensitivities to specific. I can't remember the details, but it was fairly specific information. It wasn't reading an entire patient history.
Okay, Glass. Search how to do open heart surgery. That's what you do.
Okay, Glass. Search aorta.
Oops. Where is that?
Search YouTube for
YouTube
aorta.
Videos. Aorta removal. Actually, the new head of Google Glass is a marketing executive, Ivy Ross.
Mm-hmm. They need some marketing help.
She has a rich tech background, served at Mattel, The Gap, Disney, Coach, and Old Navy in marketing. But she's also was working at Bausch & Lomb in the early 90s, vice president of design and development for Outlook Eyewear.
But what are they marketing this product, or are they marketing some product to follow?
Well, she's the head of glass.
Yeah, well, she's the head of the whole thing. Is.
Not just marketing, she's the head.
Oh, the head, yeah.
The head.
I got somebody at Rochester Optical came up to me in Google Plus saying, you complained a little bit about your glasses, Jeff. We have some really great lenses and frames. You want to try them?
Mm-hmm. Sure, why not?
So much money has been thrown into this thing. When I spoke at Google yesterday, that when I put on glass, they were grateful that I put it on.
Oh, there wasn't an audible groan?
Oh, okay. No, I'm not there. It's the one place on Earth.
Well, but really, how many people were wearing glass in the audience?
Like maybe four. I think if you laugh at somebody for wearing glass at Google, that's probably a fire.
You shouldn't laugh at them. You shouldn't laugh at them, but you may not, be wearing it yourself. All right, that's it. We've talked it all. We've talked about every story. Is there any story you guys want to rehash?
Mm-hmm.
Anything you see in the list? All right, Jeff, we're going to get you a number.
The Metathesis story is interesting.
Yeah, that is.
There's Kevin D'Artagnan Marks.
Nice.
What is that? What's the story there? Wait a minute. Who's Athos? Who's Porthos? Who's Aramis? The four musketeers. You're Aramis.
I love how Jeff has a net neutrality banner on.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, awesome. That's nice. Yeah.
It's taking me a while to parse all of this. I see.
Is that Darth? That's pretty good.
Who did that?
Here, let me check who in the chat room who I grabbed that from.
Thank you, chat room.
I grabbed that from Ben.
Do we care? I didn't do this story because I feel like this is a developing story. But do we care about the lawsuit that accuses Google of AdSense fraud? This doesn't seem like this is like.
Yeah, I can't figure it out. And I also have a conflict of interest. I didn't even know about this. I repost. I work with them in networks and stuff, and officially I'm an advisor, and I didn't know anything about this.
Yeah,
but I have a conflict there of unknown nature.
A lot of class action lawsuits are just relief, you know, kind of fishing expedition. So I don't know what the evidence is that there is any fraud or anything done on AdSense incorrectly. People for years have said there's issues, but nobody's ever really got proof. So I'm going to dismiss
it. And part of the issue is that it's not very transparent. You know, the only time you see the issue is in the quarterly statements of how much the cost of sales was.
If you use AdSense, you just have to trust that you're getting what you're paying for.
Passing through most of the money. Yeah.
Right. And Google's not keeping it all. I mean, that it's an unheard of business where they count it all and then they go, here's your share.
Yeah.
And you have no idea.
It's a black box.
That's why the Matt Haughey Metafield article is interesting, because he talks about the, Metafield's been around for 15 years or so. I think it's 15 years. It's a long time anyway. And he gives you a graph of the revenue they got over time, and you see these like steps in it where Google changed the algorithm. Because part of Metafilter is Ask Metafilter, which is people asking for advice. And at some point, that started ranking really, really well in Google. They were able to sell ads on that and pay for the 10 employees or so that are taking over.
There's a study going around called PCAD, which describes the hypothesis that perhaps advertising already reached its peak and people are harder to reach these days because they're prone to ignoring ads. And he said that happened to Metafilter. We reached our peak in late 2011, early 2012, and has seen a swift decline since. Revenues are at the 2007 level as of May 2014. And of course, Metafilter has more staff, has more expenses, but the revenue's gone down. But he also says, "Live by the Google sword, die by the Google sword."
Right. But he said, I spoke to him last year at XOXO about Metafilter and things, and he said, they're seeing the Tim mentioned this further down. They're seeing the climb of views from mobile, which means that the ads convert less well, and so they've been steadily losing revenue from that. Even though their views are about the same, because as people start moving their views from the computer to the phone, that reduces the amount of ad revenue they get.
Yeah,
Matt. What's really interesting here is Matt was the first person I know who have started a focused blog that made money from Google Ads. I think it was a DVR blog, as I remember.
Mm.
And it was really incredibly early. PVR blog.
I remember PVR, that. Yeah.
That's right. PVR blog.
So PVR blog. And he started that and just as an experiment. Oh, they put that stuff up. And so then he got ads on Google. He started making money. He started making decent money because he was the only guy writing about PVRs, and it showed, I learned a lesson from that about specialization and networks and all this stuff. And so he's always kind of lived by Google to the extent that he was aware of it. But yeah, you can't make a living just on that. And you are vulnerable to bad players also coming in and ruining the algorithm for you, right? That's Content Farms. About.com is a decent company, but it got hurt badly by Content Farms learning from what it did.
Well, I love Matt Haughey, I thought Metafilter was great. As he points out, and this is a very good piece on Medium, as he points out, maybe Metafilter belongs to three or four internets ago. He's announcing layoffs, and he's asking if people want to help Metafilter.
I just put the funding link in the chat.
Yeah, so help fund Metafilter.
Because the thing is, he charged a $5 subscription fee for Metafilter, but it's a one-time subscription fee.
Right.
And so that's a... that's the problem, is if he's got ongoing expenses. So what he's asking is, please, if you want to send us money, that'd be great.
I have to say that Metafilter does feel a little bit old school. And I say that understanding that someday Twit will be in exactly the same position where we'll probably have to say, nobody ever watches videos anymore. But...
I'm taking this as a reminder to go and look at it, because there's good stuff there, and it's actually
it's always been
it's a great community.
Much more interesting than the stuff that comes through over Facebook.
It always has been.
And I don't know why Reddit would be any more out of date than, let's say, Metafilter would be any more out of date than, let's say, Reddit. I mean, it doesn't. It's very similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's a blog with comments good comment community, basically. Right.
Dig in that forum died. So there is a half life in this thing.
Yeah.
But I've always used, when I talk about online community and comments and so on, I've always used Metafilter as an example of one that's really, really successful. I mean, it has lasted a long time, and a lot of it has been just the community sort of policing itself
Right.
But they do have eight moderators. And you know, Jessamyn's been doing a great job there for a long time in setting up those community standards that mean they do behave that way.
Well, this will be the test. If the community steps up, and by the way, when you go to metafilter.com, you'll see right at the top an important message about Metafilter that'll take you to that information and also to a funding link.
And Matt's really one of he's one of those pioneers who's unsung, right? Metafilter and PBR and other things he's done, early blogs, you know, but he doesn't have the attention that others have.
Right.
Probably because he doesn't have the ego that people like me have.
Right. Well, we've interviewed Matt several times on Twitter. I think the world of him and Metafilter.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, really great thing. So,
but he's got a great point about the peak ads as well. I mean, it's not just that Metafilter.
It may not be Metafilter. It may be Google.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we'll never know. It's a black box.
Yeah. But that's something I've heard from other people as well who rely on advertising.
You know, we do. It's one of the reasons we rely on ads that we sell or our partners sell. And we are very more inquisitive than mainstream media. We talk to our advertisers a lot about how the ads are working, what we can, you know, how we can work with them to make them more effective for our audience. Mm-hmm. And often the response we get is, gee, nobody ever asked me that before.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, I mean, your ads are like 1950s television ads.
We're very old-fashioned.
You're going back to the past.
Yeah, we're very old-fashioned.
And actually, Leo's ads are effectively native advertising, right? That's the sort of goal that lots of media companies are trying to get to with native ads or sponsored content.
Right.
They're trying to get to ads that are just content. They're just like the rest of your content.
We try not to think of it in that way, but it is. I mean, I think it's obvious when we're in an ad. We don't try to hide the fact that we're in an ad, but it is part of the overall content, I think.
Right. And the best part is that you talk about the thing and how good it is, right? That's what makes it so effective. It's not just a pop-up window or a, you know,
kind of ad it's hard to ignore.
But it has a personal value to it. And that, I think, makes so, as opposed to the wallpaper ads that appear everywhere that people ignore.
I know. I mean, I'm looking at an article on the Mail Online. The Mail Online is a really good example of website that is just larded with ads, right? Yes. I mean, just larded with ads. And
it's Charles wearing Google Glass.
I could tell you,
I saw that.
But here's the interesting point. I don't see the ads. I see the article. I am very attuned, as I'm sure most people are, I don't know what those ads were. Yeah.
Nobody, and especially if you're younger than 30, I don't even think your eye registers.
You don't register.
You certainly would never click on them. So click-through rates are 0.00001%. Many of those are accidents, you know, or drunk people.
So I don't think, in fact, Google is, I mean, we don't know because it's a black box, but I don't think they're probably lying about this. I have a feeling that it's more likely the case that they're just less, these ads are less and less effective.
Right. Well, you know, if you look at Google's positioning stuff on this, they now talk about threading the ads together across the different domains. So they will show you an ad on a website and then show you a different ad on mobile that's related to that.
It's smarter about
that.
The other option, we've tried to
interesting if you go to their talks where they're actually pitching to advertisers. Every now and then I go to a conference, there's one of those, and I drop in and see what the story is this time. And for the last couple of years, it has been very much, we understand that the website, pure website advertising is dipping, but we have, there's
lots
of
opportunities
on mobile.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, search ads on mobile are a very powerful thing because you want it to be taking action directly from them, is the
right? Or you can do what Twitch.tv is doing and to a Mountain Dew takeover. Where, I mean, it's hard to miss that ad. that's a very expensive ad unit, by the way, when you do this called a takeover.
What an appropriate placement for Mountain Dew.
Yeah, really. I like our model, and our ads work very well for our.
Yeah,
advertisers, and I hope work well for our community. What we're trying to do is we don't think the ads will work unless our community likes them, likes the content, likes the companies, because it's easy enough to fast forward through them. So we take that pretty seriously. And Prince of Wales does look good in Google Glass. This was today in Winnipeg. I wonder what his royal reaction. He's, by the way, believed to be the first royal to try on glass. He actually was trying out an app designed to help workmen keep up with the jobs they have to do. Sure, you know,
now I'm picturing the queen with glass.
We are not amused. Update on the story we began the show with. The Guardian says the Nest smoke alarm is returning to sale amidst reports of a full recall.
The press release was really about the warning in April. It wasn't something new.
Right. Well, it was pulled from sale in April. And then a press release from the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission sparked a flurry of reports that the company was initiating a full recall. Nest confirmed to The Guardian the CPSC release was just about that release in April. They just were a little slow. No further recall is planned. And they plan to put them back on sale, I think. Let me see. Well, it doesn't say that, but the headline does say the alarm is returning to sale. I don't see that anywhere in the article, but maybe I'm missing it. Oh, yeah, here it is. We'll be bringing the Nest Protect back on the market in a few weeks. So I apologize for the error. And I fixed
it. Just an update. It's fixed.
We're going to get your tip of the week, your number of the week, your tool of the week, your anything of the week you got. Matt and Kevin, if you've got something for us, we'll take it. But first, a word from one of our fine advertisers, LegalZoom.com. See, this is an example because this is a company that provides a service that we think many of our audience would be interested in. If you think you might want to be starting a business or trademarking your brand, maybe you haven't done a will yet, maybe you're putting that off because you think it's too expensive, you should know about LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm. They provide you with self-help legal services at your specific direction. So if you visit LegalZoom.com, you'll see they do a very wide range of stuff. DBA, LLC, Chapter S, Chapter C. We are LLC. This company runs on an LLC from LegalZoom. I mean, it's still. And, you know, because it was affordable when I was just starting up, and frankly, it works. You can register your trademark, monitor your trademark. All the business compliance stuff is there. Patents, too. Copyrights, too. For your family, health care, power of attorney, very important if you haven't done that. Pet protection agreement, how about that? Living will, living trust, last will and testament, real estate deed transfer, all of this stuff, very affordable. An LLC for $99 plus the state filing fee. And you might say, well, wait a minute. Okay, you go through the questionnaire and you almost, and they said, but where should I do my LLC? What state? Or should I maybe be doing a Chapter S Corp instead? That's when you can connect with an attorney and get legal advice from an experienced attorney. LegalZoom is contracted with attorneys in every state for low flat rates to give you the kind of advice you need. You can check the attorney's profile and read unedited reviews so you know exactly what you're getting. LegalZoom, they've been helping families and small business owners for 14 years. A-plus from the Better Business Bureau. You can take it from me. You can trust these guys. They're great. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIG so they know you heard it here, and you'll get $10 off at checkout. When it's, you know, maybe not right now. Just keep it in the back of your mind when it comes time to get those paperwork filed, get the legal stuff done. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIG to save $10. Guests first. Matthew, you got anything interesting? A story you're covering? A tool you like?
Actually, I was trying to think of one, and I came up with the New York Times Labs have come out with a tool called Vellum. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
No.
V-E-L-L-U-M.
I'm sure Jeff has because it's his
beat. No, I haven't.
Oh, no, it's so they didn't launch it or anything. I just sort of saw someone mention it, and so I think it's an experiment, but it's a it basically pulls in links from your Twitter stream and sort of lays them out on a page. So it's a little like paper.li, or there was another one that did something similar, but it's very well designed. And I know after a couple of days not checking Twitter, I know that's hard to believe. you know, I went back to try and to just sort of catch up and see if anybody had shared something interesting.
This
it just
neat.
Pulls in your Twitter stream and pulls out links, shows you who shared them. So it's quite handy, and it's very well designed and fast.
This was very much a business one of my students was going to start, and she didn't, so.
Yeah, you snooze, you lose. A simple reading list for the links your friends are currently sharing in your Twitter feed puts the spotlight on content Links are ranked by how often they've been shared by those you follow. Hey, this is good. I'm going to try this.
Yeah, it's, I really like it. I've been using it for the last couple of weeks.
This seems like something I could really... Let me instead of doing my regular Twitter account, I think I'll follow the... I have a links for Twitter account that is news. So this would be actually a very useful little reading list for me to keep up on the tech news.
Mm.
Retrieving... Look at this. This looks good. Tech news today.
Yeah, it's quite simple.
Yeah.
But well done.
Now makes me want to go in and
Oculus and Palmer Luckey being sued by CTO's former employer, ZeniMax Media, and id Software. Best new apps in the App Store. Silent Circle raises $30 million, moves to Switzerland. that's actually an interesting story. That's the private email system that Phil Zimmerman of PGP is doing with Ladar Levinson. The guy who was shut down by the Edward Snowden case.
By the way, who wrote a spectacular and frightening piece in The Guardian.
Yeah.
About his story. It's really...
Poor Ladar. He's really been bullied by the U.S. government, and not rightly so. We had him on Triangulation some time ago. He talked about that story, and there's a little more detail in The Guardian piece. Sad. Remembering as an extreme sport. Memory athletes. That's a New York Times article. This is good. It shows you the sources on the right. I like it. Vellum. It's at vellum.nytlabs.com. Thank you, Matt. That's a good one. Let's say hi to Kevin Marks. What do you got for us?
I want to show you Bridgy, BRID.GY. So
this is another game. You're the guy who showed us 2048.
This isn't a game. This is an indie web tool. Thank God. The 2048 is
Bridgy, right?
I could tell you that. Well, you just distracted me about my 2048.
I'm sorry.
Did you ever see the nuclear fusion version of that?
Stop now. Stop right now. It's not too late. Let's do Bridgy, and then you can show us the nuclear fusion.
So Bridgy, This is like internet plumbing stuff.
Is this Tontext thing or is it something else?
No, this is indie web stuff. So Tontext involved with founding that, but this is actually by Brett, who's built this. So what it does is it connects the stuff that you post on your own site back and forth to Facebook and Twitter and so on, with a series of different tools that we've built for indie web. So the point is that you can post, if you have a post that you make on your site, it can propagate that to Facebook and then send you back the comments to your site.
We just broke Bridgy.
Oh, no.
We snarfed it.
The entire time. Oh, dear.
Actually, the front page is okay, just some of the links within.
I will warn Ryan that you're doing that.
Everybody go to brid.gy. We're going to do a little bit of a torture test here.
Okay. So the point is, what it does, the point of these web mentions is that it's a way to communicate that you've commented on a site back and forth. So the indie web technique is that you write a post, I link to your post, and then I send a ping to you, to your web mention endpoint, to say I've mentioned your post. And then you can make that appear on your site as a comment. And this is a tool to make that.
Trackback kind of, or
it's kind of like trackback. It's more like pingback. Just trackback was not verified, so it was very easy to spam.
Right.
Whereas this actually verifies that the site has linked to you and makes the connection.
And this is a concept that Indie Webcamp came up with called Posse.
Yes, publish on your own site, syndicate elsewhere, or share elsewhere.
Okay.
The basic idea being that anything you write, you should primarily post on a domain that you control.
Yes.
And then post links to it or copies of it on other domains, because that way, if those other sites go away, you haven't lost your writing.
Right.
And that's something I've been doing more recently. Previously, I've been using Blogger, which hasn't gone away, fortunately. But I've been using my own site and posting things there and then copying them to Blogger or copying them to Medium and so on.
It's a great idea.
I don't
do it yet with tweets, which other people do. Tantech does do it with tweets. I don't have a place to post tweets on my own site yet, but I should do that. But the point of Bridgy is that it will propagate the network comments back to your open website, which means that if you've got something set up that is indie web and supports web mentions, that comments on that article on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus and so on will, and Instagram will come back to you. And the thing that was just added was web mentions for large blogging platforms, Blogger, Tumblr, and WordPress. And there's a way to set that up so that when you write a new post on Blogger, it will send web mentions to any links that you mention in that post, so they can display them as comments on their site. And conversely, if someone mentions your post elsewhere, you'll get those comments appearing as part of your comment stream on that site
too. So it all ends up in the comment stream.
Yes.
Are so, there plugins, or do you have to?
It uses the API, so it varies.
Okay.
Depending on which page you're using, there are plugins, or there's API calls. So the Blogger one, it calls the Blogger API. I think WordPress it is a plugin, and I think Tumblr is an API.
But I use Disqus as my commenting system. I think Disqus does this as well. I mean, that was the whole point of Disqus, D-I-S-Q-U-S.
Right. I'm not sure it does that fully, but it does some of this. But it's not using the same protocol, so it's not as you're then depending on another. The point of this is a switching point that replicates the web mention experience, which is a distributed protocol for these concentrated places. But the goal should still be that you're building web mentions in a distributed way, so that it's not dependent on this. But this is like it's a bridge. It's a way to connect these things back and forth.
Cool. And it sounds like it's going to be impossible for a normal human to implement.
You should talk about fragmentations. I don't know if we have time, but
what's
fragmentations?
That?
Fragmentions.
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 Sorry. Fragmentions. So fragmentions. This is an idea I came up with, another indie web thing. And the problem, let me see if I can state this well. The problem is you want to link to something on the web, but most places on the web don't make it easy for you to link to part of the page. There's a couple of methods that you can mark part of the page as linkable. You can put an A name tag, or you can put an ID on it, and then if you put a hash sign after the URL and the ID, then you can link to that piece of it. Now, this is it's been in the web platform for a long time, since HTML 2 or something. It's a long time. But the problem is actually finding those IDs is quite hard. You mostly have to do view source, or the site has to work to give you a link that you can get from it. And you can only link to the places where there are IDs. So what I wanted was to link to, thinking about the use case of linking to something, what you normally are doing is quoting them and linking to that quote. So you're saying somewhere in this long 400-page post, there was this quote that I thought was interesting. I'll cite that, and I want to link to that text. And so what I came up with was this fairly arbitrary syntax, which was instead of one hashtag, put two hashtags, and then put the word separated by plus signs, which means it's human authorable. You can write these by hand fairly easily into the address bar. And then Jonathan Neal, who is one of the IndieWeb guys, wrote a script for this. So that does two things. First, you can put this script on your site. So if you make one of these URLs, it will link to that text, and you can then highlight the paragraph. And then secondly, he made a Chrome plugin for it, which means that you can do this to any site, and it will do that. It'll link to the and highlight the text that you're linking to. So that was something that we put together a few weeks ago. When was this? Oh, it was almost a month ago. And the value of this is actually conforms with what you want to do. And then more recently, he added the feature to the Chrome extension that if you select some text and right-click on it, you can get a fragmentation link from that. So which means that actually creating these links gets much easier.
Yeah, that's nice, yeah.
Mm.
So you can, it will then create and highlight the link. You can copy and paste that. So that was added to this as well.
It's very cool.
And what we found, the thing is, once we found that, then we added it to some of our blogs, and we added it to the Indie Webcamp Wiki, and then we found we were using it all the time, because it's actually generally you want to link to a piece, and you may not, even with a wiki that's fairly well structured, you may want to link to a paragraph within a longer piece, and we found that this worked quite well. And then a week later, or a couple of weeks later, I got a ping from John Borthwick talking about, I've got to remember the name of the app now, the app, the Read Later app. What's that called?
Pocket?
Instapaper.
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 Instapaper. So this is Marco's app that,
he sold.
Borthwick
made it work fine. Yeah.
So the basic point of that is you get a read later button in your browser. You click on any too long article, and then later on you open it when you're on the bus or sitting at home with your iPad or whatever. You open it up and you read the long form thing when you've got time. And the new version of this, they added a feature that lets you highlight text in it and then share that out on the web. And what they did was they integrated Fragmentions into that.
Oh, okay.
So that if you highlight a piece of text in one of these long-form pieces and then post it out to Tumblr or Twitter or whatever, it will create a Fragmentions link that then goes back to that page. And then they modified their browser extensions, which are for Chrome and for Firefox, to support this as well, which means that you know, like any of these things, you need to have script in more than one place for this to be useful. Mm. But it has a reasonably stable failure mode, which is if the browser doesn't understand what you're doing, you just get linked to the top of the page. But once you add this, it starts getting more useful. So it's one of these ideas that makes a lot of sense to me, and it's a starting point for richer kinds of linking in the web. And have a look at it, try it out, see what you think.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
The original post is kevinmarks.com/fragmentions.html. And there's links in that to the various other places about that, the Chrome plugin and so on. The main discussion's going on at the
IndieWebcamp.com.
IndieWebcamp page on this. Hang on, I pasted that in the wrong window. Sorry.
IndieWebcamp.com/fragmentation.
Fragmentation.
I remember when
Fragmentation. By the way, when you search for this, Google is going to always say, "Did you mean fragmentation?"
You mean fragmentation?
Yes.
I remember when
this is one of those clever names that isn't as clever.
It's
as
a terrible idea, but it says what it does, which I like.
Dave Weiner and Jay Rosen, I think, both had links to specific paragraphs in their blog posts. I think Dave was the first one to do that, so that you could link directly to a paragraph instead of to the. And that always seemed like a great idea to me.
Links don't get deprecated so fast.
Mm.
And so what I always do it, I Google a passage, and that always works better.
No, that's true. Yeah. And that was part of what made me think of this. I went to the annotations workshop at WTC talking about this and realized that actually the most robust thing is
Google it.
Some text.
Yeah.
Then that made me think about, oh, but if I want to cite part of a page, then we should do the same thing.
Right.
And you get into debates about what happens if the text's been edited or how do you support punctuation and so on. I think but the starting point is having a piece of the text that you can apply those kind of algorithms to and creating those. And there's if you go to the Fragmentation page on IndieWebcamp, there's links to lots of other variations of this idea that have happened over time. I'm not saying this is completely original, but it's a practical implementation that actually works. We've got a bit of support for it. And the syntax for it, I think, is better than the other syntaxes that have been proposed previously, which is one of the reasons this has taken off. And try it out, see what you think.
And there's a WordPress plugin, a Drupal plugin. There's a lot of different ways.
Yeah, but basically it was put together like... We were like noodling about ideas in the IRC for IndieWeb, and Jonathan said, "Oh, I can implement that. Hang on, give me 15 minutes." And 15 minutes later, he said, "Here's some script that does it."
That's really neat. This is IndieWebcamp is really starting to show some real interesting results. I'm glad you're doing that.
It's been sort of ticking over for a while, but we're starting to get working code in more than one place, and that's when you start getting takeoff. And that's.
Find out more.
The next thing is to try and then, you know, get platform vendors to integrate it as well. But this... Mm. So the other IndieWeb news this week, I should mention, is one of the IndieWeb open source projects, IDNO, is now a company called Known, KONWN. If you go to withknown.com, you can see what they're talking about there. Basically, it's a holding page, but... This is Ben Werdmuller and Erin Jo Ritchie have put together this up to date publishing platform that's like a modern blogger or a personal Twitter or whatever you want to call it, it's been an open source project that Ben's been working on mostly on his own for a while, and Erin's been helping with the design on it, and they've just quit their jobs and done a startup.
Wow.
To, have to go and work in an incubator to build this as a product.
This is what we used to call live streaming.
Yes. But it implements all these indie web protocols. It implements web mentions. It implements RSVPs, which is a variation of web mentions that lets you actually invite people to events and have them say yes or no, and then bridges those back and forth to Facebook and Twitter and so on. So there's a lot of nice subtle stuff in this, but it's a way to give you back control over your own postings and still propagate them out to Facebook and Twitter and so on.
And it's fairly mature. You can install this now. I mean, is it working?
They are setting up a hosted version of it. You can install it now, but you have to set it up yourself with a PHP hosting server. So they need to make that smoother. So at the moment, the point of this is to make the install process more easy than getting stuff off GitHub and doing that. So
the principle is one that Dan Gilmore wrote about, and he and I talked about. The idea that so many people have kind of moved away from a blog that you have that's your own and are posting content on Google Plus or Facebook or Twitter or lots of places that are effectively owned by large corporations and are siloed to some extent, and that we're losing a lot of the sort of the principles that IndieWeb supports, where you kind of control your own content and you share it with whoever, but your site is the central place where it exists.
I like this. And now I think maybe, when live streaming started, it was a little maybe early, but now that we are all using these silos aggressively in Instagram and Twitter and everything, it would be nice to have, this is a known stream, be nice to have somewhere that they could just all go that you own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's
remember Friend Feed?
I loved Friend Feed.
That was great.
I miss Friend Feed.
Me too.
Problem with Friend Feed is nobody used it. They just ported their stuff into it.
Yeah. Like,
well, but that's the thing. So this is the other, in some ways, the inverse of that. This is you post it on your own site,
and then it goes
elsewhere. Pours your stuff into Facebook and Twitter and D+. Yeah.
I like it, and I want to set up my own. I want to change my blog to a known stream.
Excellent. Go for it. Ping Ben. He'll help you.
Okay. Well, maybe I could just download it from GitHub, and we'll see what happens. Yeah, what the heck. All right, Jeff Jarvis has been very patient with his number. The lights have gone out in his house.
Oh, that's right. It's darker now, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to wave.
That on. It's the middle of the night.
Maybe I'm in my pink. The problem is if I put my hands up here, then my skin tone gets okay again. And if I put them out here, they don't. Why is that?
Well, it's just hold your hands up. Kevin? It's called your computer screen.
Huh?
Your camera is, because your face is not enough landmass for the camera to iris down.
That's better.
You need a big face, yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought I had a big face.
You just need to be a bigger percentage of the shot.
It's all the white balance in your dark room. If you put the lights on behind you, it would help, but then you'd probably change the color.
All right, well, we're almost done. Yeah, so I'm going to cheat on my number.
Sit like that.
I wrote a piece on Medium this week because I realized that for 40 years, I've been writing on computers for 40 years. How's that, kids? Since 1974.
Wow.
And I realized that all that time, I have had this twitchy habit, necessary habit, of hitting the save button in the day of word processing, or now the control S in the age of Microsoft. And I use Google Docs and I use Medium to write, and also WordPress, and they all save automatically for me. And so that whole notion of that little, save, my fingers will just do it like by reflex is gone. And with it, pardon me, I'm getting choked up here. And with it goes the kind of moment for reflection that I used to have. And so I wrote a piece about how computers affected how I write and how that affects. And it's gotten a lot of good response, and so I thought I would just plug it.
Goodbye, Control S, which was how we used to save documents back in the day.
Can't remember the last time I did that.
My early days on VDTs.
Yeah.
And how switching from mono screen to H and Jade.
This is fun. I'd love to, because I'm right there with you all the way.
Yeah.
I didn't go quite so far back, but I started writing on computers when the personal computer era began. But so George R. R. Martin, author of The Game of Thrones, it turns out writes on a DOS machine using WordStar 4.
Mm-hmm.
So Control KS still works for George.
Classic.
Wow.
He revealed this on Conan the other night, and it was
Control
like
Control H.
Wow.
What did he say what machine it is? Is it old K-Pro or?
I don't know.
What could possibly still run WordStar? Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Commodore 64.
WordStar 4.
My Osborne 1.
3 would be the classic. 4 is a little bit,
Modern.
Too modern, yeah.
So, Kevin Marks, I'm going to cede my time for my tool of the week to you for Nuclear 2048.
Well, hang on. I've just got some breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news is that...
This show is never going to freaking end. Go ahead.
apparently, AT&T messaging is being used to steal single-letter Twitter accounts. I just got this from Tantek, who has T.
What?
So I put a link in Orange to a tweet from Orange Photos saying this. And Twitter.com/J, which was Juliet Melton's account, has been taken over.
Oh, no.
And...
So what you would, if you had AT&T, I presume the way this works is they opposes you with your phone number, and they get Twitter to send a reset command.
Mechanism here,
but
definitely at least one has been taken over, and they may move on to other Twitter accounts. So
turn on second factor authentication, everybody, right now.
Yes, exactly.
Not that that would fix it if Twitter is letting stuff leak through, but there may be other. Maybe it's a chance. So has T been stolen?
No, T hasn't been stolen.
But J has.
Tantic doesn't have a phone number, so he's safe.
There's only 26 of you who have to worry about this.
And underscore.
He doesn't have a phone number?
Add numbers is 36. Tantec doesn't have a phone number?
Doesn't have a phone number?
He's decided he doesn't believe in phones, and so he has a thing that creates Wi-Fi from a phone account, and he uses an iPod instead of an iPhone.
Okay.
He's always slightly ahead of his time, Tantek. He has his own way of doing things.
He sure does.
Matthew Ingram, always the journalist, looking, digging deeper. He jumped right on that one. He doesn't have a phone number. Matthew, is it Giga? Oh, wait a minute. Nuclear 2048.
Okay, so the summary of Tantek just said, if you use AT&T Mobile for your cell service, make sure your phone number is removed from Twitter, Gmail, Facebook profiles, and so on. Because if you are using the SMS for two-factor auth, that means you can right. be taken over.
In fact,
make sure you don't have your phone number on financial institutions.
We talked about this on Security Now yesterday. Fellow demonstrated how you can bypass second factor authentication what I did as a result is immediately removed all my phone numbers from the second factor authentication page on Google. If that phone number becomes known, somebody impersonates your phone number, gets a voicemail sent to it. He keeps you busy, calls you so that your number's busied out, gets the voicemail number, then calls back, gets the code, and logs and resets your password. So that's actually something we talked about yesterday, and it's interesting it's being used against Twitter already.
Right.
Did not take too long. One more time, the nuclear fusion variant.
Okay, I've got to find this now.
I'll find it for you. I have a link to it. It's newbricks.github.io.
Right.
Fuse your way to iron. Yes. So you start with two hydrogens.
So it's F.
Yeah, wow.
And then you turn them into deuterons.
Turn them into heavy water. And then you get the deuterons.
H3. And then you turn them into H4.
H3. Oh, this is hard, but it's a good way to learn chemistry.
Because actually, you can only turn certain match senses with others. So then you can accidentally make it into beryllium.
I've got beryllium.
Which has a half life. So as you keep moving.
Oh, no, it's counting down. It's counting down.
So at the bottom of the page, there's a guide to what you have to do. And both, like, there is this problem.
Is this Twitch for Oxbridge graduates?
Yes. Yes.
So you can get stuck at magnesium because that's stable. So if you accidentally make magnesium, you can't carry on.
How often does that happen?
You've got to be careful.
Do not accidentally make magnesium or you will be so sorry. There's a deuteron. There's two berylliums. Let's merge the berylliums. I can't merge my berylliums.
What you need to do is make oxygens and then merge the oxygens, I think.
Oh, I get it. It's not merely merging the same. You have to now make chemical.
Yeah. Well, you have to keep making four heliums and adding four heliums to things, except that if you add it to neon, you end up at magnesium, which means you're stuck. So you can get past that to...
Wow. This is way too complicated.
You can get past that to silicon by adding two oxygens. So basically you've got to make oxygens, then add them together, and then you can use that to build iron.
I've got an oxygen.
Okay, so careful. Don't accidentally turn it into a neon, because then it's very fragile and could potentially turn into a...
Oh, man. Oh, this is tough. This is
a
good
hard game.
This is good for chemists.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing now. I've gone beyond my chemical knowledge.
Well, it plays a bit like 2048, but then eventually you start realizing what's going on.
And yeah, I understand.
And okay,
but I have to go down here and look at the tables.
Physics, so I think this is easy. But
I mean, my fusion guide and my decay guide. That's the key.
Yes.
This is good. I like it. That's Fe26. Fuse your way to iron, baby. It's at dimit.me/Fe26. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a very fascinating episode in which we've already retracted the first story and created beryllium. If you ever want to be back again, please come back on a Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC. Kevin Marks, thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure.
It was fun to be here.
IndieWebCamp.com. That's probably the best place to go to find out what Kevin's up to. I think this is actually
yes. And there's IndieWebCamps coming up on the 28th of June in New York and Portland.
Awesome. And I want to install IDNO.
Or
IDNO.
Yeah.
IDNO. Or
Known, as it's now called.
Known.
Because apparently nobody understood what IDNO was.
What is IDNO?
I don't know.
I'm going to try that right from GitHub. I'm not going to ask for any help. I'm just going to see if I can screw up my server real good.
Well, if you need help, go to the Indie Webcamp IRC on Freenode.
I shall. That's easy enough.
Yeah,
secret instructions. This is why we love technology, my friends. All you people on iPads, you're just going to have to suffer without us. He's sitting in the dark, but he is not in the dark in his mind. His mind is a bright beacon of hope and a light for all of us, casting its warmth and its shadow.
Looks like the floating head on Red Dwarf now. It's like Holly.
Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism, City University of New York, BuzzMachine.com, the author of Public Parts and What Would Google Do, and the giant head on Red Dwarf. Thank you for being here, Jeff. We appreciate it. Thanks for rushing back for the show. I really appreciate it. Matthew Ingram from GigaOhm, GigaOhm.com. Great to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
If you miss any of these shows, you can get them all on demand at twit.tv/twig or wherever you get your podcasts. There's lots of places, including iTunes, of course, Stitcher, and the like. But we also have apps on all the platforms, and I highly recommend you find one of our apps. They're all third-party independent developers, but they're all great people that work hard, and those apps will help you get every single episode of our show. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on TWIG.